Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and since we had our Valentine on last week, we're bringing her back again because she made such a good call on the markets. It's our friend, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, just living the dream. It's definitely been a busy start to the week here. We had yesterday off, but today we're... on Tuesday here, we're cooking with gas, so can't complain, I guess.
Yeah. So, what's in your opinion? What's behind this big rally?
All of it. It's Argentina driven. So we've seen meal and oil take off big time because of the concerns over what's happening in Argentina, which makes sense. I mean, they've had their driest February since like 1980. So it's a story. It's a legit story. I get that part. And like I said, it's pushed the byproducts up, your meal and your oil, and made for some exciting times. Argentina is the largest supplier of meal and soybean oil, to the global market. I think they're like something like 47% of meal and 49% of oil, or vice versa. You can switch those if you need to, but in any event, they're close to half of the world's meal and oil exports. And so a concern over their dryness is valid. But it's important, you know, there's two things that are really important with this recent run up, to point out. First thing being, Argentina also has the world's largest carryover expectation, you know, per the USDA. And the most recent report, they were put at about 1.2 billion bushel of expected soybean carryovers. So let's say we take another 5 million metric ton off from their production, which is around 200 million bushel. You're still looking at a billion bushel of carryover. So reality is reduction in production is good to see if we actually have that many beans, you know, for the overall global market to see what's going on there, because domestic price should encourage sale and kind of bring some of those out of the woodwork. The other thing is the USDA is already predicting the largest soybean crush on record. So in soybeans, you have two sources of demand. You have exports of whole beans, and you have crushing domestically of the whole bean here in the countryside. And the USDA is already saying that we're going to crush a record amount of beans. So you cannot really expand crush capacity beyond where we already are by much. I mean, we only have so much crush capacity available. Yes, we're building more, and it'll come online over the next couple years, and you'll see that demand continue to grow, because you'll see the plants continue to expand and things like that. But it's not something that you can wake up the 1st of June and suddenly find that you've increased crush capacity 50 to 100 million plus bushels of beans. So overall, while I understand, you know, what we've got going on, the underlying factors that are you know, contributing to this rally eventually will kind of run out, and one of these days will probably come in and the balloon will pop. But when that is, no one knows.
You know. All right, before you get too complicated, because I have some more questions, before you get too complicated, explain to everybody what crush is, besides Orange Crush.
Right? Crush is basically you take a bushel of soybeans, and when you crush a bushel of soybeans, so you take 60 pounds of soybeans and you crush them. It is what it is. You smush them. You know, it extrudes a product from the bean itself. And each 60 pound of soybeans produces 44 pounds of soybean meal, which is a high protein feed that we feed to all livestock, cattle, hogs, chickens, whatever. That's soybean meal. It produces 11 pounds of soy oil, which is used in biodiesel, food, anything of that nature. It's an oil, just like vegetable oil or canola oil or anything else. And 3 pounds of soybean hulls, which are just the outside of the bean, those actually have some protein content and feed value as well, and they are fed to cattle mostly. And so you take and you talk about crush, and the big factor in crush, of course, is soybean meal and soybean oil, and those are the byproducts that are made from a bushel of soybeans, or crushing soybeans anyway.
So does that, so that's that also trades as a spread, correct? The I mean, they do,
yes,
trade the crush. I mean, that is done. Do you trade the, yes, crush yourself?
I do not. No, nope. I know people who do. They are very brave souls, because it's one of those market structures that can get really, really squirrely on you. And yeah, so you know, you trade the crush. You buy. You can do a couple different ways of trading the crush. You know, of course, you buy your beans, you hedge your beans, long beans, short meal and oil. And of course, if you're caught in that respect in a market structure like this, you're trying to escape it, because meal and oil have outpaced beans, I believe, in how the crush spread is traded. But yeah, you can trade the three components. All of which, you know, have hedge availability versus like corn, you know, ethanol grind or something like that, where you're dealing with other byproducts in that regard. But you can trade the three components and you hedge your oil or hedge your meal, you know, on what you're going to be selling those for as a crush plant, because you sell the byproducts and you buy the whole product. So you're trying to minimize your cost associated with purchasing beans and maximize your cost, you know, associated with selling meal and oil. And eventually the big players, I think, will determine that it's a selling point when it comes to meal and oil. But until we know for sure what's going on in the Argentinian, you know, overall market, meal and oil will likely continue to stay elevated, which will keep beans supported and buyers buying. Now, word just kind of broke here that there is some rain being introduced into the 11 and 15 day forecast for Argentina. Which would come, you know, at a decent time for the bulk of the bean crop. It'd be around pod fill. So we may see this market kind of back off a bit, but 11 to 15 days in a weather forecast is 1,000 years, you know. So we have a very long time until we see whether or not that weather, that rain comes to fruition. And so we're at the mercy of the market until we know something different or something has changed, or we have an idea exactly what we're looking at overall on expectations.
Well, we're always at the mercy of the market, but again, I get into the overall footprint the market leaves. I'm not a big believer in all this other crap that we talk about, because I think it more comes down to the money and the money flow. That's really what I look for. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of this news, you know, it's not, I don't think any of it's a real surprise. Do you?
No. I mean, that's the thing with beans is you know, I've been anticipating long-term wise for beans to back off, but I've also spoke for a couple different groups, one of which I spoke to on the 28th of January. So before this market really absolutely took off, I think we were trading 983 on the March board, maybe even a little bit less than that for soybeans. And plain and simple said, you know, hey, I would not be the least bit surprised to see beans rally 40, 50 cents in the next couple, 3 weeks, just because of that money flow. And the market tends to hand out maximum punishment when folks assume they know exactly where the market's going to go. So there's a lot of conversation about, you know, the crop in Brazil.
Hold that thought, young lady. Okay. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Sis's Elevator. And of course, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you listen to the show every day and go download it at libertytalk.fm. You can download the show daily and help us get to our goal of 1 million downloads a month. So I'm counting on you to help us out. And don't forget to get Bubba's Daily Update, which is available at BubbaTrading.com. All you have to do is go to BubbaTrading.com and fill out the little form. It's free. And every day after the market's closed, you get an update of what I saw and what I expect to see tomorrow. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here right after the break with more from Angie. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, all right, so continue your thought of the money flow and what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's just beans have, like I said, they beans are really good at doling out the maximum amount of punishment possible to anyone. So as soon as you assume, you know, what the bean market's going to do, it's best to just kind of sit and be on the sidelines, in my opinion. You know, I'm not going to sit here and fight a move higher, even though it may not make sense on paper, simply because, like you said, money flow is the king of all things. And, you know, I had an old-timer tell me one time, though, that you never trust a byproduct rally in the bean market. And that's a legit, I think, a legit adage. It's definitely something that eventually one of these days we really stand the likelihood of coming in and seeing beans down, you know, multiple cents for multiple days. But until then, like I said, we might as well win in Rome, you know. And so that's what I've been telling a lot of my customers. We've had guys that have had opportunities for $10-plus beans to move out of the bin. I spoke to a customer today and I said, remember when you put those in the bin, they were worth $8.80. He's like, yep. So what are you, you know, you gained $1.20 on 10,000 bushels that you had. That is a solid gain, you know, return on investment. What are you looking to accomplish by not selling them at all? And he ended up selling them. And I'm not here to bully anyone into making a selling decision. I can just tell you, in my experience, you know, the 14 years that I've been doing this, working with customers, I would much rather have a customer call me and say, I sold a percentage of my beans 30 cents ago. I have more to sell, you know, and lament about the fact that they sold too cheaply with the opportunity to sell higher, than to have someone call me and say, I have 10,000 bushel in the bin. The market's a buck lower than what it was. What do I do now? You know, especially with the current economic situation in farming that we've talked about, you know, the idea that you would ignore a $10,000 gain in value on a crop that you planted hoping for $9.25 for or something like that is somewhat troubling to me. But it's definitely something that we deal with, especially when the market runs up as quickly as what we have. You tend to get some euphoria and continued optimism that the market can never break, and then that's followed most of the time by despondency and depression because it did break and no one saw it coming.
Well, like every other market in the world, they listen, there's one thing I teach, it's called universal price. All markets are exactly the same. They all trade the same way. We always get too hepped up and revved up when they're going up, and we always get too despondent when they're going down, which is why human emotion plays such a big part in the game of trading itself. So it doesn't matter what you're trading, they all end up trading the same way anyways, because if you look at a technical pattern, technical patterns trade out because that's who runs the markets is technical trading. So I always believe that it's always better to at least get some off the table and be pissed off that you didn't get more than as you say, depressed because you got less. And I think that, you know, I think for this particular move, pretty much across the board, we're probably at the upper end for now. I think we're going a lot higher as the year wears on, but I think for now, I think this is probably near the upper end. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like you said, the technicals are something that you've got to really watch. And in beans especially, I mean, that's once we broke the $10 mark on the March, then you were looking at 10.23 as the next target. And once we broke that, you know, of course, we closed right about it at that level on Friday. We had an extended weekend. It didn't rain much. So it didn't take us much to blow through it. You know, in fact, we basically gapped open, you know, gapped on the open up 9 cents right off the get go. So, yeah, technicals have a huge driver in especially the bean market right now, especially when it comes to establishing the range. And if you look at the high end, you know, 1040 was kind of the higher end of things that we saw happen here on the November 17th. So I always pay attention to the front month. And, you know, you and I have had conversations about it in the past. I am not as good a tech trader as what you or many other people are. I call myself a backyard tech trader, meaning that I pay attention to support and resistance levels or roundabout support and resistance levels. And those are what I tend to focus on when it comes to market moves. So in the beans especially, I mean, they just really kind of beat up their range and they have a comfort level that they have, you know, kind of achieved with where they want to go and what directions they want to head. And you don't almost set your watch to them anymore. You know, it's a buy. If you see it trade into that 963 level, it seems on the front month, and it can be what you would consider a sell. If you see it for a while there, it was anything around 10, but we broke through that 10 and then broke through that next level. And so we tried 1040 here today, failed. It doesn't mean that we won't try it again, but it's definitely been something that you could look at and look back over the past year of trade and see these, you know, notches as important values to pay attention to, and they continue to remain as such today.
Yeah, well, 985 was my level forever, and we kept going back and forth over 985, and now, of course, I would be a seller at 1040 or 1050 for a trade. I mean, again, I'm a big believer in the grains, but I think that as wheat showed us, you know, wheat turned around after being much higher, and I think that's more the pattern that we're going to see now, is we should see some selling, either some people will get in and hedge a little bit here and sell some, or you'll see some shorts come in. I think they squeezed, as you and I talked about, they're going to squeeze the shorts out, and I think that's pretty much been accomplished. And now I think you see a little bit of a sell-off, but I think that really creates just another buying opportunity once they get this. You know, we know that markets don't go straight up anyways. So I would expect to see some sell-off here to now get a chance to rebuy. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely anticipate a bit of sell-off, especially since we failed at that. The 1040, you know, blowing through that 1040 level. I would imagine, you know, we've got to test and see if we see some support around that 1023 level, then we may see some buy side come back in if we can't force much below that. But I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see us test the $10 range here, you know, sooner than later. Maybe we do both. Maybe we test the 1023, find support there, work our way back up towards 1040, and then test $10. You know, it's really one of those things that the bean market has the ability to be relatively violent, and everyone was complaining about the lack of volatility in the market structure here, you know, a couple months ago, because it was like watching paint dry around the holiday season. And now we've gotten it back, and unfortunately, wheat and corn don't seem to necessarily get the memo when it comes to that. You've seen wheat back off here to start the week, and the thought of rain. You know, everyone's kind of watching the rain in the southern plains, and the idea that it rained down that way for some has been what you would consider or had a bearish influence on the market. The damage there has been done with a lot of that wheat. Sure, you could see some come back and see it come out of dormancy and correct itself if the weather pattern were to change, you know, 180 degrees. But, you know, I think wheat will find some support too. Corn is stuck. I mean, corn really is stuck at a value right now that is a good value. I mean, it's encouraged. We've seen some export purchases and things like that, and we really have to see what's going on with South America. But to me, the thing that's most surprising is that you've seen beans gain all of the value, when the reality is long-term, I think corn is the one that is going to gain more out of the South American story than beans, you know, as we move ahead. I think the issues with corn in Argentina are far greater than the issues with beans. Both crops are damaged, you know, don't get me wrong, but I think corn has a longer-term impact on overall market structure than what's going on in the beans.
Well, but however, as we look at it when we come back from the break, the biggest gainer percentage-wise has been wheat, and then corn, and soybeans has been the lowest gainer percentage-wise. So if you took the equal amount of dollars and put them into all three, you'd have made more in wheat than you would have made anywhere. But of course, that's something we'll talk about when we come back from the break. But in the meantime, we're with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, and she's also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator out in Michigan, but lives in Iowa. We'll figure that one out later. In the meantime, don't forget to check out highschoolinvesting.com. It's, of course, you know that I've taken care of that and supported it myself for 7 years, and I'm begging for help. So if you want to go to patreon.com/BubbaTrading, you can help continue that program, and we can continue to try to educate our youth. And, of course, libertytalk.fm is where you can download The Bubba Show every single day, and you can download The Sporting Edge on the weekends, and also our new show, which is Crypto Investor X with Matt Demner. And lastly, but not least, is don't forget to get Bubba's daily update, which is available to you at BubbaTrading.com. You go to the site, and up pops a box, and you get the update for free. All you have to do is put your email address in, and we will send you every day after the close about a 3 to 5 minute video, which will tell you what we thought of the market action that day and what we expect the next day coming. And you get that every single day, including a 30-minute show over the weekends. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We're with Angie Setzer of Citizens Grain, or Citizens Elevator, excuse me. And this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back after the break.
Well,
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and put you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, you know, I say the percentage gains were much better in corn and wheat than beans. Mm-hmm. Even, I mean, again, the number is bigger, so it seems bigger, but it's, you know, if you had taken equal money. So what do you think? I think that corn is still pretty strong, although I do believe it should probably come back a little bit. It's up from, you know, the low 340s and up to almost 370. Yeah. So that's a pretty good move. What do you think?
Oh, no, I agree completely. I mean, anytime I have a marketing conversation, I talk about the fact that a 5 to 10% gain in a bear market, which we're in a bear market. Like we can talk about it all we want, but commodities, of course, have been in a bearish cycle here for some time, and you know, the last several years. They continue to be as such, I believe. And so you see a bear market, and a 5 to 10% return on investment is definitely something that is huge to pay attention to and should be sold. And, you know, so you look at corn, and it's gained back 23 cents from its low side. And so that's a substantial gain on a product that's worth $3.68. You know, you're looking at a 6% return. Does that mean that it can't go any higher? Absolutely not. But it definitely means that farmers should be looking at taking advantage of some of these values, especially if they have bushels that have been moved into commercial storage or have bushels on basis or something like that. We definitely have seen folks take advantage, I have at least, of some of these values, and definitely take advantage of some of the new crop. Now, December hasn't rallied as much as what your March has, but it definitely has gained, and we're back within shouting distance of $4. And those are good numbers to be looking at for customers. And I do have some that are taking some risk off the table by getting some bushels locked in because they know they're making money. The same can be said for new crop beans and things like that. And yeah, wheat has gained back what, 50 cents from the low side. So that's a pretty substantial gain. That's over that 10% that we talk about. And at one point, actually, it was up 60 some cents. It traded to 463. And I think the low end on the March has been about $4. Low end on the December was even lower. I think 380 something was where we bottomed out there. So yeah, wheat has clawed its way back. A lot of people didn't think we'd necessarily see this. You know, we're going into delivery next week, so especially in Chicago wheat, you'll start to see some real interesting developments in what happens with the spreads and overall market trade and things like that. And so it'll be something that we want to watch. And honestly, over the next 10 days, wheat's going to be difficult to pay attention to or really get a feel for what it's doing, just because it has gained back that much money. You know, your short position by the funds has been almost completely liquidated, and then you're going into delivery in what is a pretty funky sort of cash market setup. You know, here in the Chicago wheat market, we've seen Toledo basis firm up substantially. We haven't had the Canadian wheat flow into the U.S. like we typically would, so that's changed available supplies and firmed basis, which has also firmed the spread. You know, and the question is, will some of the big players sitting in Toledo, you know, holding on to the millions of bushels of carryout that we're anticipated to have, you know, are they going to play some delivery games? And then that makes, you know, things extra interesting on the wheat side here in the short term. But long term, I think wheat finds support from conditions, concerns, reduction in production. I think it continues to try to trade a bit higher. But there's definitely opportunities to be looked at. You know, I have customers that are looking at locking in some futures. You know, July 19 feels like it's forever from now, but it's really not. And they're able, you know, at one point they were able to get close to 550 futures. And so that's definitely not been a bad number over the years. And so we have some, like I said, taking some risk off the table on that side too.
Well, you and I are not surprised at the rally, though. I can pull the tapes up. We called for this rally when wheat was 380 and when corn was in the 340s. So, you know, we both had the same concern, which was soybeans, but we both had a level that if it broke above, it would probably go higher. So we're seeing higher prices. And again, I think that, you know, you look at a day, you know, like Tuesday, where the dollar was much higher, but yet the grains were higher as well. And again, I say, now, I don't know what you think. I've never talked to you about this before, but I think that the dollar is meaningless now. I don't think it has the same meaning it did now that we're almost a global currency, because everybody, they take turns almost punishing somebody's currency so they can create better exports and all the other crap. But at the end of the day, I think the dollar is relatively meaningless, because it really comes back down to supply and demand. If you got it and somebody needs it, they're going to buy it. And if the markets are assuming higher, they're going to go higher. What do you think?
No, I agree completely. You know, there was this big amount of conversation that was being had about how the, you know, a year ago, it was the topic du jour. Everyone talked about how the stronger dollar was going to limit our export capabilities, and life as we knew it was over. You know, it was basically as much doom and gloom as you could stand a stomach, and that didn't happen. You know what I mean? Corn exports were actually higher from the year prior, and we saw some pretty solid foreign buying interest. Now, maybe it impacts wheat a little bit closer, but the reality is, Wheat, you know, if we run out of wheat elsewhere, you're going to see people come back into the U.S. market to buy, whether it's a strong or a weak dollar, you know, at the time doesn't really matter overall. And so, yeah, I think this idea that the dollar impacts commodities is kind of one of those rudimentary sort of trade philosophies that people will always point to, especially if it works in correlation or confirms their bias of a market move for the day. Oh, you know, the market is lower today because the dollar is higher. You know, they have no other reason for why the market should be short other than, you know, let's see what the dollar did. Oh, it works to confirm my ideas that the dollar impacts commodities, so I'm going to use it as a reason behind that move. I mean, overall, though, long-term, yeah, I think that people will buy based from where they can get the highest quality, most reliable supplies. And in the end, that tends to be the U.S. You know, when it comes to trade, though, I am definitely monitoring what's going on, you know, with that steel and aluminum tariff conversation that has been floated about since Friday. That could have a real impact. That would have a much larger impact than any trade of the dollar, the real, whatever, in soybeans, you know, plain and simple, if we were to see some sort of tariff or import quota put upon steel and aluminum, because I think really right now we're just kind of poking the bear that is China. And when we're reliant upon them like we are for soybean exports, you know, we really have to watch what that means for us long term.
So what do you think of the effect of that? What do you think the tariffs effect will have? What's your take there?
I mean, all I can look at is what we've seen develop, you know, with the we put on the washing machine and the solar panel, the tariffs there or whatever. We limited trade on that regard and said that China was dumping them on us. And suddenly, you know, within 10 days or 2 weeks, we turn around and seen China put on an anti-dumping investigation when it came to sorghum, to milo. And we really anticipate, or we really need China when it comes to milo exports. They're one of our biggest buyers. There is a lot of conversation right now that the Chinese are discussing, and this was before the talk of the steel or aluminum tariff. The Chinese are discussing an anti-subsidying anti-dumping investigation when it comes to U.S. soybeans. We've already seen them, you know, come out and limit the quality that they're going to take in, or the FM that they're going to take in. We've seen them complain about the protein of our crop. You know, we've seen all of these things kind of come about. So they're setting the table to back away. And yeah, my biggest fear, and I understand there's a lot of factors, you know, outside of commodities when it comes to making these tariffs or quota decisions or something like that, but you know, I definitely look at what that could mean for soybeans if China were to back away. And it's another reason I have concern of substantial downside risk if we were to see, you know, either it rain in Argentina or traders decide to give that up as a story and see China come out and say that they're not going to take in the beans that they have been. I mean, it's just another, you know, one of those things that you wait to wake up one day and see it announced overnight that that's going to happen and look to the market and see it down limit or something like that. It's just a risk that we have to be aware of and, you know, kind of that 500-pound gorilla in the room right now.
Well, I don't know about the 500-pound gorilla, but I do know that the markets will do what the markets are going to do. And, you know, there's going to be some volatility and there's going to be some downward, you know, push if something happens. And that's just part of the business. And I think I think you should be right now almost expecting that kind of action. Why? Because right now is where we are with that market. And I can't stress this enough. That markets do what markets do, and we know and we expect that to happen, and that's why if you're not hedged, this is a great chance to at least take part of your stuff off the table, and if you are long, it's a great time to take some profit because the probabilities in the market favor that we could move to the downside. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We are with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator and at Twitter at Goddess of Grains. And of course, this is the Bubba Show, and we are asking you to make sure you download the show every single day so we can reach our goal of 1 million downloads a month. And so we need your help. And don't forget to get the Sporting Edge on the weekends, as well as Crypto Investor X with Matt Demeter. And of course, Bubba's Daily Update, which is available to you for free. No credit card required. All you have to do is go to BubbaTrading.com. Fill out the little form, and of course, you can get delivered to your inbox every day after the close a brief summary of what happened during the day and what our expectations are for tomorrow. So you get tomorrow's newspaper today if you go to BubbaTrading.com. This is The Bubba Show, and again, we are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and we'll be back with more from Angie after the break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We're coming right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, my dear. So, where do we go? What's our next route here? What's on the horizon? When do you expect it to be busy? What's the planting schedule? Give us the whole details.
Oh goodness, yeah, we're gearing up. I keep telling myself that it's only a matter of a week now, basically, and we're going to be into March and. So March comes and we'll really kind of get adamant about discussing crop planting outlook. So the USDA has come out and they have their outlook forum here this week, and they'll put out their expectations of what the U.S. farmer is going to do for the next 10 years and blah, blah, blah. And they released their long-term projections last November, which is kind of what they'll build this outlook forum on. So we're going to be looking to that to see what they have to say. The USDA has put acreage at 91 million for corn and 91 million for soybeans. So up a bit from a year ago, they expect wheat plantings to be down, stuff like that. I don't know if I expect that. Honestly, I think cotton and milo are going to cut into some acreage. Dry weather in the southern plains generally will encourage sorghum production because sorghum is a milo and sorghum are the same thing. But sorghum is a much better drought tolerant crop than corn. So I think you could see some milo stealing some acres. Cotton prices have been encouraging some acres. So that's going to be the conversation that we're really going to be looking at here for the next 6 weeks. USDA will release their updated acreage outlook and quarterly stocks March 30th. So aside from South American weather between now and then, that's what we're going to be trading on, that expectation. And so really, that's going to be about the only thing. Farmers are finalizing decisions. Mother Nature will have the final call on planted acreage, but farmers have a pretty solid idea of what they're planting now, and that should stay in place here for a while. So that's what we're going to be looking at. And then, we're watching the drought monitor in the western Corn Belt, and so between that and planted acreage, that's basically what we're going to be seeing. You know, just getting geared up for the new crop year.
But again, this is something that always irritates me, and I want to know why we are continually fooled by what the USDA may or may not say, To me, that's a bunch of crap. Their reports are garbage. They don't mean anything. And they really don't mean anything to the farmers either. And what means something is how much money can you make or how much are you going to lose?
Yeah.
And what is the market telling you? What they tell you is all garbage. What they tell you is already basically priced into the market because everybody's buying and selling based on what their own individual needs are. So tell me why we keep waiting for this stupid report, which is a total ridiculous report anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it's because it's what the market's become accustomed to doing, honestly. I feel like a lot of times, and I joked in the past, that the reason my life feels like it goes by so quickly, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like it was just 2012. How the hell is it 2018? But we're always looking ahead, you know, and people will joke, that's why you call it a futures market. But the USDA either confirms or changes what trade is expecting. So trade will build its own expectation. Current expectations is we're going to see more soybean acres, probably see more corn acres than we need, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's really where we're at. And I think the USDA is one of those things that really comes out and, like I said, confirms or changes what the trade is anticipating. And so either you see that confirmation and you continue to trade in an adultered sort of sense that, you know, maybe you don't really move too much. Maybe you move for a minute and you get back into the range or something like that. If the USDA changes expectations, then you suddenly have to kind of switch gears and build off from what they're going off from, because that's what trade does. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you could argue the benefits and the detriments of USDA reports until you're blue in the face, but the reality is they're there. They're going to come out, and that's what trade, you know, is going to be watching. It's there's two things that we really have going for us here in the short term, and that is, you know, what happens when it comes to South American weather and how that influences.
But I got to step in and argue with you. I'm going to argue this until you're done here. The money is the people that know. Okay, are already pricing in well ahead of the report. Okay, you've got guys at these big firms that are actually doing the math to calculate these reports out, so they have a pretty good feel before the reports ever hit the street. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, there is a whole plethora of private information that's traded. You know, people who have an idea of what's going to happen. I mean, fact is, crop insurance. You know, if you want to put on a tinfoil hat, or maybe you don't even need a tinfoil hat for this, but crop insurance final purchasing date, where you have to basically write up your intentions of acreage planted, is March 15th. The USDA report comes out March 30th. If you think that someone hasn't had access to market information or that information between in those 2 weeks time, you're crazy, in my opinion. I mean, I think that there are people that have access to that information, and that is what it is. And so, you know, for me, the importance of the USDA reports are there simply because, like I said, they confirm or they change trade expectations or thoughts about what's taking place in the market structure. I don't know, you know, and maybe it's just I'm a victim of my own demise or whatever in this regard that I take them seriously. But, you know, we have seen times in the past where we've went in with a certain set of expectations to a USDA number, and they've turned the world on its head, so to speak, and we've had to readjust our thinking. Whether it's right, wrong, or, you know, not is hard to say, but it is what we kind of, it gives us the parameters in which we have to function, and that's about all we can.
Right.
Can do
but I want to know why. Why? That's my question. Right? Why?
Why? Why does it happen?
I mean, why is it, again, I know you don't solely look at the USDA report, okay? I know that you're much smarter than that, and you've got a much better idea well ahead of the USDA report. So you're not sitting there waiting to trade on that number. I know that already, okay?
No. Yeah, no.
But many are. And what I keep trying to, the fact I keep trying to put across to everybody is that number for you is meaningless. There's no way. Even if you were there and watching it, you could not take advantage of it if it was going your way, because it's already been priced and everybody's already in. So if the move is going to, if there's going to be a move because the numbers are off from what the street expected, it's going to move well before you ever have a chance. And what's going to happen to most people is they're going to end up chasing their tail and get stuck. That's my opinion.
Yes. Analysis paralysis. Yeah. If you put too much weight on any fundamental, technical, any factor in trade, yeah, you're going to sink your own ship, honestly. And so the thing is that when it comes to trading USDA reports, most people just stack orders. Well, they used to, at least. I think the CME's kind of cracked down on that. But they used to put orders, you know, limit up, limit down, whatever it may be, and try to capture things in between. And that's why you would see big moves, you know, in between the high and the low after a report. And then you'd settle, you know, right around where we need to be. Some would argue that the volatility that used to come with USDA reports is completely disintegrated. I mean, the last time we saw a big surprise in a market report was over 5 years ago. So it's one of those that, you know, yeah. To me, I get excited over USDA numbers simply because it gives us a parameter in which we function. You know, that's just where I'm at. That's my opinion on it. I still get excited. The day that I stop getting excited about getting a new set of USDA data is probably the day I'll start to reconsider what I'm doing, because my passion is gone. Because I do really get excited that you could see big moves to the upside, and nervous that you could see big moves to the downside, simply because my customer base is very dependent upon, you know, the market not being overly volatile. The reality is, though, my trading activity is very limited going into a USDA report or directly thereafter, simply because my customers have already done what they need to do, and they're not going to be heavily influenced by a USDA number to change their mode of thinking, if that makes sense.
And that's the words, according to Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Thanks, Angie. I appreciate it. Always great to have you on.
Yeah, I always love coming on. I really appreciate you having me.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.